Welcome back to More Than a Hemline. I am Danielle Immerman, CMO here at The Reflective, and I am joined by none other than our founder and CEO, Liza Sakai. I am very excited for this episode because we are going to do a deep dive into what Liza is up to behind the scenes. We're going to investigate how Liza makes all of her curation decisions, what goes on, why you're not seeing more products from Amazon, why you're seeing this and not seeing that, everything. We're going to cover it all. So Liza, we're going to hop into it. First of all, can you just do a little high-level background in your experience in fashion? Because I think it's really important for our listeners and our community to understand how long you've been working in the fashion industry and how much knowledge you have racked up throughout the years.
Totally. So it's definitely not all that much, keeping in mind that I'm 24, but I have been in this industry for a decade already. Sounds crazy. But I started working in fashion when I was 14. And by that, I do not mean on the retail side. I literally mean in like a fashion office on 7th Avenue in New York City. I worked for a designer known as Yigal Azrael, who at the time is, I mean, they're still amazing, but they were really booming. And I had a friend of a family somehow get me in the door. She'd been working for him previously, and I think they told him I was probably like 15 or 16, not 14, because that was just weird. But yeah, that's really where I kicked off. Obviously, I learned a lot by, you know, watching in that internship, but my day-to-day work consisted of, just like you imagine, Devil Wears Prada, getting coffee, dropping off packages, picking up a dress, you know, that we drop for some celebrity to wear and dropping it at a different stylist or taking it to the cleaners. I even, you know, I was very, very tiny at that time, and model standards at that time were also really small. Like I would say, you know, women were expected to be double zeros, which I was because I was 14 and pre-puberty, not because, you know, I didn't eat enough. So I became a fit model in that internship. So it was really like I got to see the ins and outs of everything, which was amazing. And then from there, every summer I would move on to a different brand. So I was at, you know, Hot Hippie. And then I went into college and I decided I wanted to move away from the brand side and just get a little bit more perspective into other aspects of fashion. So I worked at, you know, a fashion consulting firm. It was actually all fashion and art, and they were the ones, they're known as Lightses & Co. They're amazing. They were the ones that started the idea. Like, they really launched the idea of the collaboration. So when you see, like, Coca-Cola team up with H&M, like, they were the ones behind these initial collaborations. Lady Gaga and Barney's, like, everything was them. So that was incredible, and I'm still actually in touch with my previous bosses from there. I just got off the phone with one of them last week. And then from there, I was on the tech side for a little. So I was on a fashion tech company for a few months in Israel working there. And I realized that was totally not my thing. And then from there, I went to the buying side with Bloomingdale's, which was, you know, the culmination of a lot of years of hard work. And I graduated from NYU in the business school. And that was also a study of fashion. I really specified in luxury and retail. So all of my coursework, even there, was around fashion. Like, I was never confused on what I wanted to do. It was always this. And then finally, I took a full-time position at Bloomingdale's, where I basically built, with a team of other amazing women, pop-up shops for the Bloomingdale's company. So that was the most amazing because it gave me a full view of what it takes to have a retail store, which I didn't know was preparing me, obviously, for The Reflective at that time. But really, it was like these mini Bloomingdale's. So I would, you know, do part of the buying, and I would source brands, and I would get them onto our site, and I would analyze their sales data, and I would, you know, think of ideas for future pop-up shop concepts, and I would work with hotels on partnerships on how we're going to get our brand into their hotel lobby. Like, I was doing everything. And that's really, really where I learned, you know, how to source and pick product, and how to know what's going to sell well and what's not. And also how to know it's not always about the sales. It's more so about, like, how to know on the whole what products that you need to incorporate in order to build what's called a curation, which is a word we use here at The Reflective a lot. there's always going to be 3 to 5 products that sell really well a season, and everything else is really just there as decoration and fluff. But like, what pieces are the fluff, and who are they serving, and why are you incorporating them? And what does that say about your brand? That's like my biggest takeaway that I've now brought into the reflective that really impacts my day-to-day process. And picking everything you see from your newsletters to social media to obviously our e-commerce marketplace.
Whoa. Can you speak more to curation and further define it? Because I think on the surface, we can kind of understand what that means, but practically, what does that mean and look like?
Right. So curation's a pretty modern concept in fashion. It's a buzzword for sure that we throw around, but basically the industry is inundated with product and with retailers. There are so many options of where you can shop. And there's personalization within that. Obviously, you know, you can filter for what you want and things like that, or there's, you know, technologies that even, you know, target you with certain products. Like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Yes, but it basically like memorizes your shopping patterns and targets you with product that fits your style. So there's a lot of improvement happening in the space of quote unquote curation, but it's basically when you take a whole ton of product and you build out like a capsule collection of it is how I look at it. That's based on a certain theme. So that theme can be you, Danielle, like it could be Danielle's curation, what fits you. Or it can fit a certain audience. So it could fit, you know, musicians, or it can fit, I know there's a company now known as Collagerie, and they really, really emphasize curation. And that curation is built around the one product overall. So it's built around really investing in pieces. And I don't mean like only monetary investment, like these are the ones I'm going to spend the most on, but just investing like thought and time into what you're going to purchase. So that's a type of curation. There's 11 Honoré, which is another brand, you know, that's been built out about curating for the plus size woman. And it's really meant just to target niche groups. So for us, obviously we are curating for quote unquote the modest market, but that even that could incorporate so much product. And curations are meant to be more niche. So we've honed in on that even further, and we've built a curation for the modern modest woman. At an attainable price point. And even the word attainable is vague and spans a ton of price points for us, but it was really about targeting that woman between, you know, 20 years old and 50 years old who maybe doesn't want to go buy, you know, a luxury designer gown every time she has a wedding, but still wants beautiful high fashion product that is both relevant to mainstream fashion trends and also expressive of her and her personality.
Can you now speak to your process? I would love to know, and I'm sure our listeners would love to know, how you curate on a weekly basis and what goes into your decision-making process.
So I want to say this with, you know, caution and humility. I don't think that I have the best style in the world at all. There are people who dress way cooler than me and way better than me, but I had noticed in throughout my childhood and all of my college years, and even when I met you, Danielle, and we were in, you know, a school together learning in Israel, women seemed to be attracted to what I chose to wear and emulated it in a way. So as funny as it feels for me, a lot of the time my first check is, would I wear this? And it doesn't mean it's my style, because that would just be, I'd be curating for Eliza, but is it something that I would walk out of the house in and be proud to be wearing? And if I can't say yes, automatically that product is not a part of the curation. So that's first and foremost. And a lot of people, you know, reach out to us with questions like, why don't you include this brand or include that brand? And as much as I'm sure they're amazing and there's a customer out there for them and people enjoy their product, if it doesn't speak to me as Liza, I trust my gut and I trust my intuition at this point in my life and in my career to know that it's not something that belongs on the reflective. And the reason that I stick to that so strictly is because we've been trying to develop a sense of trust that anything on our site is something that you as an outsider can come in and shop, and trust has been thoughtfully selected for you as something that is, you know, on trend, and not just on trend, but something that is like a piece. It's like a piece of art that's going to help you express yourself to the best of your ability. So that's really where the process starts. I have, you know, I'm discovering new brands every day. So if people have brands in mind, definitely send them my way to liza@the-reflective.com. But once I have, you know, a running list of brands that I focus on, and as they pull out new pieces, I pull the ones that obviously are modest. So for us at The Reflective, that means typically they cover your shoulders and they hit to at least your knee, and they cover above your cleavage, and they should have flexibility for layering. That's another aspect of it. And then, again, it should just meet our quote-unquote reflective fashion standards. So obviously, that doesn't leave a lot of product because there's so much limitation already in what's modest. And then on top of it, to add my personal taste, it's a little bit more difficult. But we weren't here to build the next Amazon. It's not how much product can we sell. It's how can we build, you know, a place where people can turn to that they trust and to do their everyday shopping for every single occasion. So right now, our curation might feel small to certain people, because it's not over 1,000 products, but that's done intentionally, and I'm sure we'll expand with time as we bring on more buyers onto the team that, you know, will work side by side with me. But in the meantime, I'm handpicking literally every piece that you're seeing on the website, so just you guys can really trust that it comes from someone who's been thoughtful and caring about what I want to see all of you wearing.
Liza, these short and sweet episodes are so great because I feel like we can dive into one specific topic, and this topic being curation. What does it mean? What do you do? What does it look like? And nailed it. So thank you all for listening. And if you have any comments, questions, thoughts, feedback on this episode, on curation, on what curation means, please email me, Danielle@the-reflective.com. And if you could just take a few seconds to leave us a review on the podcast player of your choice, we would be forever grateful. Thank you so much for listening.